Check, check. 1, 2, 1, 2. Hello? Hello?
A little more?
You're getting it in stereo?
Talking?
That's my natural voice is in stereo.
Tell him you'd like
it comes out of both ears.
Tell him you'd like a handheld mic.
I'd also like a handheld mic if it's possible to get one down here.
Okay.
There
you go. Okay. All
right, sir. And?
Go to one.
Oh, yeah. I am on one. There we go.
Right.
Okay.
Advances left, goes back.
Okay. And what are the other buttons? That's blank. And what's the red? Is that
laser.
The laser? Okay, I don't need that. Okay, I think I'm ready. What do I do for 20 minutes now? Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for all your help, Scott.
You're welcome, sir.
Oh, okay, excellent.
And you know number 7 in there for your
digital? Yeah, okay. Yeah, I saw that. Perfect, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Is that on always?
It's
I'm going to have a couple of...
I can do whatever you want. I can.
How does it work?
You can turn it on like this, and I can mute it from back there. Or I can just leave it unmuted, and then whenever you're ready to use it, you can flip it on. And
okay, let's do that, because I don't know when.
Okay.
Because it'll only be if there's questions.
Sure.
There's a couple of people in the room
so
from product teams.
So you're going to leave it off and turn it on yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Did you need anything else?
Nope, I think I'm all set. I'm mic'd up now, though, right? Can they hear me in the house?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks. Hey, good to see you. You're going to be you're going to start a wave in the front, right?
You tell me.
Do you do localization of apps and stuff? Is that why you're here? Or you're just here because you're my fan club? All right, I like that.
So what are you talking about? You said building world ready, so localization.
Right. Globalization, yeah. Localization, translation, and all that stuff.
You
hey, Alan.
Do it? I'll do it.
You want to take the... You don't think I can handle it? Is that what I'm saying?
No. If you get tired, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good. I'll hand the baton over if I fall over. Hey, Alan. How are you doing?
No, you're on my own.
I know.
Speakers.
I know. That's okay. Yeah. Did you go to the beer party last night?
Yeah.
How was it?
Oh, it was good. It was loud.
Was there bands playing?
Yeah.
Or who was playing?
No idea.
Oh, okay. They're supposed to have a really good band tonight, so I'm kind of looking forward to that one. I actually went and got a wristband so I could go.
Did you get a reply from
Todd?
No. No.
I'm going to send him another kind of tickler today.
I've talked to those guys I told you from Twitter and...
Yeah.
And they are up for it.
Oh, okay. So you want to do it tomorrow? We'd have to find someplace quiet to talk.
It depends on you. If you can, I don't have a way to find anything here. So if you can find it, then we can do it. If not, we can do it on Skype.
Yeah, there are none, because I saw someone yesterday was trying to find a room to practice, and he couldn't. So we'll just have to find a quiet corner somewhere. Or I guess what we could do is maybe just find a room in a building nearby. I can just reserve a conference room in a nearby building. Okay. So we're doing
I don't
from
know.
9 to 10, right?
Yeah, I got your invite, but you can do anything with it on Surface.
Do what on Surface?
Open the calendar invite. So
why?
The mail app.
Oh, okay. Well, you have a phone, though. You should be able to open it in the phone.
No.
Why?
You can open it with the phone.
Why?
I don't know. It comes as an ICS attachment, and that's it. You click on it, and it's
ICS. Oh, that's your mail server doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your mail server doing. You need to switch to Exchange. Do something real.
You need to make Office 365 free.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. We have found it's
maybe
hard.
At least really
it's hard to generate
autocratic
revenue.
Yeah.
How are you doing, Alex?
I'm
doing well.
Just say good luck.
Yeah. Are you attending?
I
think you know this stuff, yeah.
I'll see there because
okay.
I need power.
Okay. Someone else has already said if I mess up, they're ready to stand in and rescue me.
If you want, I can stay.
No, I think we're good.
No, I don't have
it. I think we're good. Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks. We'll see you later. How's the content coming?
Good. We have the last one, basically the shared source, almost ready.
Okay.
So I believe maybe Monday.
That would be good because I'm in the office I think on Monday, so mm-hmm. I'll have some time,
mm-hmm.
and then I think I'm traveling Tuesday
yeah,
to go to Greece.
I do remember. So we started from the last one.
Okay.
As told us, we have this content ready. So
okay.
So Monday, I believe, we'll have this ready for review. Maybe
That's awesome.
maybe even two of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys are going well. I still haven't seen the PO get approved yet.
Oh,
I think Drew
so
is sitting on it.
So we should stop.
Shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah.
I think because of build. Sitting in Drew's inbox.
I know, that's why basically we started and we took some stuff from the Laris Jumpstart because the slides are very good. So we are not copy pasting definitely, but using some graphics on there.
Okay, good.
And the slides.
Okay.
And like, you know, the general look and feel.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah. So
thank you. So look for it on Monday.
If you need, you know, to ask you, just
I'll call Alex, where are you? So send me a note, and then I'll try and find a room right after the session. I have a meeting with Travis Loudermilk after the session for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe around 10, I should be able to sit down and figure out where we could meet tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay,
sounds good.
Cool.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Thank you. Hey, Cameron, I did find a handheld mic. So if you want to come down here, if there's questions, I could just hand you a mic.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah, just down here. Closer to where I am here. Yeah, perfect. That Mac thing.
Good morning. Can you guys hear me in the back? My clock says about 8:30 here. You guys ready to get going? I'm worried about having too much content, so I want to try and start on time or maybe even early. So let's get started. My name is Ben Riga. I am a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft. I'm in the developer and platform evangelism group, and I focus exclusively on Windows 8. Spent a lot of time working on Windows Phone, but lately I've been spending a lot of time thinking about Windows 8. And one of the things I've focused on is building world-ready apps, so we're going to spend a lot of time on that. I should mention that there's a lot of product teams at Microsoft, as you can imagine, and so I had a lot of help with this session, and there's actually a few people from the teams in the audience, and so if I get into trouble, they're here to rescue me. So Cameron Lerum and Eric Albright and Tim Hewer as well, who you may know from other things. So thanks to them. So let's get started. The things we'll cover in this session, first we'll talk about localization and how you can localize and pull resources out and make your applications easier to read in other languages. We'll talk about language resolution and some of the new things that are in Windows 8 and in Visual Studio that make it easier for your apps to figure out which language is best for the end user and actually makes it easier for you to do that stuff. We'll talk about globalization, where you will actually format dates and times and currency and numbers and so on. And then finally, we actually have a pretty good story around translation these days, and so we'll talk about that as well. And related to that is sort of testing and debugging of apps. So you may have seen this slide already. It's an important one. If you're not convinced, probably one of the biggest things you can do to grow your install base for your app is to localize it. Windows 8 in particular, the store will be in over 230 countries. The apps will be available in 100 plus languages, and there'll be developers from 120 plus markets all over the place. And then as a developer, you can get payout in a bunch of different currencies. The important thing here is that there's very few countries around the world where your app will not be available. If you think about that, that means there's a lot of people that are speaking other languages other than English or whatever might be your mother tongue. And so that makes it a huge incentive for you to localize. At some point, I think I saw the number was around 75% of the people on the internet don't speak English as their first language. And so, as you can imagine, they would prefer to see your apps in their primary language. And so it behooves you and certainly will help you differentiate if you do that. So the number one thing you can do to grow your growth, to grow the growth of your app in a particular region or market, is to actually localize it into the primary language of those markets. And so the question then is, how do you do that? And what are the things that you need to think about when you do that? There are a couple of things to keep in mind. So when we talk about world readiness, what does that mean? To the user, that means the content is in my language. I'm not going to talk about content much today because it's not a focus here. But things like the navigation and the tools around the content, the Chrome, if you will, around your app, should be in their primary language. Data should be formatted correctly for their culture. I mentioned this earlier, dates, times, currency, numbers, that sort of thing. And then text input should just work. To the developer, you want to do that, of course. You want to make your users happy, but you want to do it in a way that you don't have to destroy your productivity by having various code bases and so on. So your code base should be identical across all the various languages. You also want to separate your code from the UI text so that that UI text can be translated by someone else who is better suited to translate text. And then you should easily support the linguistic and cultural needs of your users. And we'll talk about all those things today. There are a few things that are new in Windows 8. We'll go through some of these in detail. The first thing is that the user provides a list of preferred languages. Previously, the user had one language, and it was up to you to kind of figure out what to do with that. Now the user provides a list of preferred languages, and so many users can speak different languages. And so I, for instance, speak English as my primary language, but I also speak French because I grew up in Canada, and I also speak Italian because my parents were Italian. And so I can list those three languages, and then if an app doesn't have English as their primary language, they can fall back to other languages. And we'll talk about how Windows does that. But the important thing to note is that Windows will intelligently use that information to find the right language for the end user. And I'll go through a number of scenarios about how it does that and what are the different things you need to think about. There is a client resource management system that works for HTML JavaScript, so there's no need to call a server every time you want a string. I'm actually doing another session later where I'll spend the bulk of my time talking about HTML and JavaScript. This session is primarily around C#, and basically XAML, so C#, VB, and C++. That same resource management system works across all of the various languages. And the other thing, you don't have to worry about images. So images were kind of a pain in the past, where you had to try and figure out what language and how to translate it. Windows 8 actually makes that a little harder because you have all sorts of different scaling and so on. But the way that Visual Studio arranges it, it actually makes it quite easy. And so it should be fairly easy for you to manage all of the various things that you need to worry about. And then, as I mentioned, we actually have a pretty good story around translating. And so we'll talk about that as well. So there are three parts to building world-ready apps, and we'll talk about these in sort of consecutive order. And then testing, I'm going to include that as sort of as part of translation. So the first step is localizing an app. When you localize an app, the first thing you have to do is you have to pick your default language, and that's done in your app manifest. And that language is kind of important, and we'll talk about why in a few minutes. But essentially what happens is if Windows can't figure out what language to use from your list of languages that you've translated, it will default to this language. And so again, I'll go through a lot of different scenarios about how that works. So that's the first thing you need to do. The next thing you need to do is pull out all of those hard-coded strings you have in your code and in your markup and put that into resources. And you do that a number of different ways. The way I've done it here is I have a resource folder, and then within the resource folder, I have the various different languages. And here I have both my images, one image in particular, as well as the resource files. When we talk about file-based resource management, there's a number of things you need to worry about. One of them is files. And so these are things like images that you might have in your app, media, HTML, CSS. You might even think about XAML as a resource. You should consider, I mean, we do actually make it fairly easy with Windows 8 to manage these. I do caution you that if you have images, for instance, that need to be translated, it's much more expensive to translate an image than it is to translate text. So I'd caution you to try and work with text when you can. But when it's not possible, Windows 8 and Visual Studio actually makes it fairly easy. So you create your file assets for your different languages and your various DPI scaling and so on. And then there's a simple file folder naming convention that you have to adhere to and then ensure your elements are tagged correctly. The naming convention is up there. I don't know if you can read that in the back. It's a folder name, then qualifier, value, folder name. And I have an example here of one. So for instance, for my logo, I have in an image folder, and then an ENUS folder, and then a home region USA folder, and then my scale-100 with a contrast white PNG. Basically, when Windows looks at that, when you ask for logo, you ask for images/logo, and then Windows figures out how to manage its way through that various naming convention qualifiers and values and all that stuff. It will just do all of that sort of magically for you. And we'll see how that works in a couple minutes. The next step is actually localizing a string. And so this is useful for where you have hard-coded strings in code, where your code, for instance, needs it dynamically and you're not sure. It's not actually in your markup. Here we're actually talking about markup. So you would move your strings from markup to a resource file, as I mentioned earlier. Earlier, we had what were called ResX files. Now we have ResW files. It's kind of a similar format. Actually, I think it's an identical format, but what happens under the scenes is quite different. With ResX, we had static resources. ResW, it's all done for you, and it basically builds what's called a PRI file under the covers and then manages that for you, again, magically. And I'll show you how that works in a couple of seconds. And you can also use resource loader class getString to retrieve the resource by name. And so if you're doing that in code. And then in markup, we would also add the XUUID attribute to your elements. And when you do that, again, if you've named your files properly, then XAML, as it's compiling, it will just find those elements for you. So it should be fairly straightforward. And then finally, the last thing you need to think about is actually your presence in the system. So not actually in the app, but when you're on the start screen, when you're in the store, when you're in search, your splash screen, all of those things need to be localized. And you do that via the app manifest, and you can use the MS-resource URI scheme to do that. So I'm actually going to show that. I'm starting to lose my voice already. So let's see that. And I need to switch over here. OK. So here is an app. Let's actually run this app. I am actually looking here at, in my control panel, I pulled up languages. And these are the list of languages that I have told Windows that I, as a user, understand. And so these are actually in order, in the order that I would prefer them. And so when I put English US at the top, if the app knows English US, then it will pull from that. And then if it doesn't find English US, then it will drop down to various, depending on, you know, what order they're in, it will find the right ones. And so in this case, it's English US. Let's have a look at this app and what it does. So it's a pretty simple app. It's got content. As every Windows 8 app, primarily all the navigation is off the screen and you focus on your content. And there's really not much to localize here. The content we don't worry about, but things like the title is probably the only thing I'd want to localize on this screen. The other thing I might want to localize is, my keyboard's not working here. There it is. So I have an app bar on this, and so I need to localize that app bar. And then I also have a settings panel where I have the language set. And here I have a language settings, and the language settings actually has an image that tells me which language the system thinks I'm in. So let's have a look at how we might localize some of this stuff. OK, so the first thing is that title. And so you can see when I look at the title of the app, it says the name of my app. So even though when I ran the app, the name of my app was not what, what was displayed. And so if I look at that, you'll see that I've actually, I have my resources. I showed you this as a screenshot earlier. Here's my EN-US, which is the language that I chose primarily. And so if I open that up, you'll see that I have resources. And this is just a file, a name value pair list that includes all of my various resources. And so somewhere I have my app name. And you see it right there, appname.txt. And it says pay me please, which is the name of the app. And so if I come back to my, here it is. So if I come back to this edit control, text block here, you can see that I have set an X colon UID. And I've told it that the name that I'm going to use for this resource is app name. And then what I'm actually localizing is text, right? So here, the name of the app. So if you think about that, you couldn't do this earlier. But now you can actually localize various parts of your elements. So for instance, if I wanted to localize the font size based on a language, I could do that as well. In this case, I'm just using text. And so when I give it XUID, then the system will then look at that resource and say, let me come back to that resource file. And I'm looking for app name, and app name has just .txt. And so it'll pull the .txt and do that and pull that into the XAML for you at runtime. Does that make sense? The other thing we looked at was, let me just come back to my items page. And find my app bar. And there it is. So my app bar includes a number of buttons, as you can see. And all of them have an X colon UID. But in this case, because the app bar buttons in XAML are not just straight buttons, they're actually you're actually using the resource from the standard styles.xaml file. And in this case, I'm using the edit app bar button style. And it does all of the fancy stuff, including putting a button and then the text block under it. But that makes it a little bit more difficult in that it needs to be able to find that resource. And so how you do that in in the resource file is a little tricky. Here's my edit was the one we were looking at. So if I come back to that file, I gave it rats. Just find that again. So the first one was edit app bar button style, and I called it AB edit, so app bar edit. If I come back to my resource file, you'll see that it says edit here, but what is edit referring to? It's a little tricky. Basically, it's the automation properties.name. And if you look at the standard styles, I think I have it here already. Let me find it. There it is. And so you can see that the style here has a bunch of properties that are important. And the one that I want to change is the automation properties.name. And so the way to find that is, again, a little tricky, but easy when you know. There it is, right? So windowsui.xaml.automation, et cetera. Make sense? Have you guys hit these problems before? Am I going too slow? No? So really quiet. Is it just because it's early? OK. I am willing to take questions. So if you have questions, please let me know. OK. Let's keep going. So some of the other things that we saw were a little bit more dynamic. So if we ran the app, I'm not going to run it, but if you remember, there was a settings panel. And so the way you get that settings, let me just run it again. I'm so used to doing this on touch, but I can't use my touch screen, so I'm having to go back to keyboard again. You'll see here this list has got my list of settings commands, and the one that I have is called language, and then I have a user control for that panel. And so I need to get that word language translated, because to someone in China or Japan or France or wherever, they want that to appear in their own native tongue. And so the way you do that is in your app XAML file. So let's actually go back and have a look. So if I go back to my app XAML, when my app is loading, I'm in the wrong page. Here it is. When my app is loading, and I'm using Callisto in this case, which is a tool that Tim Heuer pulled together that is open source, and you can pull it down from GitHub. Callisto actually does a lot of the work for you in some cases, and I use it a lot when I'm using doing settings for settings flyouts. That flyout control is quite handy, and then also it has this settings management, which actually makes it easy to add that language string in my settings list. And so in this case, I'm using the resource loader, newing up a resource loader, calling it resources, and then I'm pulling from the resources this string called lang settings and putting it into lang settings.txt. And then I'm just using the Callisto control to use that lang settings.txt. And so as you would imagine, that lang settings is the name of the resource that I want. And so if I come over here, you'll see that lang settings actually says language. And as you can imagine, that's what I'll need to translate. And then when I come down to my actual lang settings control, let's have a look at that. Now, here is where I have my image, right? And so this image, in this case, is English, but I want to have that in the various languages. Now, again, I caution you to do this. This is not a typical scenario. But you may, in some cases, there's good scenarios where you might actually need to have different images depending on the language or culture. And so in this case, I'm just using it to display my point here. If I look at this image, it looks like a standard image. right? Nothing fancy here, no special tagging or attribute here. I'm just saying resources/language.jpg. Now, if I look at resource, the resource folder, there is no language.jpg in that folder. But there is under each one of these, right? And so what Visual Studio does when it builds this make PR, when it uses make PRI to build that PRI file for you, is it parses your folder structure and finds the right file based on the way you've named it. In this case, I'm using resources. I might have put it in an image file and done a similar sort of image folder using a similar thing. In this case, I just put them all together just so it's easier to find. But here you'll see that language.jpg, the one that it's displaying is the English one, but I could easily find the German one, and there's a similar one for Spanish and another one for French. And all I had to do was give it the name resources.language.jpg, and it finds it for me. And then the last thing in this file was that I used image tapped. That's kind of similar to what I did with the, if I bring up the, again, I can use the resource loader. So in this case, I want to display a message. And so using a message dialog, again, I use a resource loader to pull in the string. I put the string in the text, and then new up a message dialog and then show it. And then that message dialog, as you can imagine, is the are you sure, right? So if I actually tap on that image, it will show that. So let me just to make my point here, I'll move this French language up. And then when I run this, my app should actually look French. Don't worry about the translation. I do know French, but not well enough to consider myself a translator. But you'll see here that now my title has changed. If I look at my, there it is. If I look at my app bar, my app bar has been translated. If I look at my settings, right, it no longer says language, it now says long. And then if I click on language, you'll see that it now says Parlez-vous français. And if I click on that, my message is also in French. Does that make sense? It's actually pretty straightforward now to make this sort of thing. The problem might be in how you manage the translations, because as you can imagine, those resource files can actually get quite long. And we have a solution for that with the toolkit that I'll talk about later. Any questions? Am I just doing such a great job of explaining it that you just all get it? There is a question. Okay.
The name of your app is in Spanish, and that's the name that you installed it with from the store, or how does that work?
Oh, good point. Thank you. I actually missed that. Thank you. Someone was paying attention. Thank you. So if the app, for instance, let me just stop this. I mentioned this earlier, that you also want to translate what your app looks like. So let's come back to the start screen. And if I scroll to the end, actually, sorry, it's over here. It's this one, I believe. It's you see here it says, pay me, please. It's still in English. Let me just uninstall that. Actually, let me uninstall this one as well, which is it's the equivalent, but in JavaScript. And then if I rerun this, before I do that, let me just show you. In my app manifest, I am telling it the display name for my live tile. It is actually coming from the display name. So rather than actually saying pay me please, which is the name of my app, I'm saying use MS resource, colon, and then app title. And you can do that for description. You can do that for all sorts of things, short name. All of these images, for instance, the logo, there, you wouldn't use MS resource, but it does use the same naming convention for your files. So when it tries to look for the file, so if I want my logo, my splash screen, all of that localized, then you would just use all of the same principles I just talked about earlier. But the one thing that is different is that MS resource. And so by using MS resource and calling it app title, let me come back to my, did I close it? Let me just open up my resource here. Here it's, actually I'm using French now. I think I set it to French. So let me look at my French resources. And there it is. You'll see that I have something called app title. And in my manifest, I'm referring to that using my MS resource. It's kind of small. I don't know if you can see it in the back. right? And so if I run this, now uninstall the app because it actually caches the tile name, and so you actually have to uninstall this to test it. There it is. Payez-moi, s'il vous plaît. Do you see that? Does that make sense? Does that answer your question? OK, great. Any other questions? Yes, sir. So the question was, if I deploy my application, do I deploy all my resources? And so why wouldn't you? What scenario would you?
To keep the package small. Because if the resources contain images and JPEGs, package may become very large.
You could. I think as part of deploying to the store, you would then have to have multiples. So the gentleman is saying that my package, because of all my various images, might start to get large. And so if you wanted to do that, you could split it up into multiple apps, but then you'd have to submit to the marketplace as multiple apps and then manage that. So it would get a little bit tricky, but certainly you could do that and split your app. And then you'd have to manage that, right? When you build the app, you'd have to turn off languages and move. It would be a bit of a nightmare, I think. In general, I would say keep it all together. Any comments on that, Tim? Did I get that right? Yep.
A typical workflow required to store it is release your app from whatever language you wrote it in, and you have third-party translators to translate, put satellite assemblies on your systems of the country, so you don't have to worry about getting everything done day one release. This changes that. So how do you integrate with third-party translation packages like Catalyst or Visual Localize to facilitate that? Because if we have to have all languages translated to get our app into the store,
okay, so the question is around translation. We'll go into translation in a lot more detail later on in the session. But the question around how do I build and then actually manage all my translations?
Well, you're showing that all the assets are already in your project.
Right. Sure. So what I would suggest in that case, if you want to do your translations after the release, is make sure your app is localizable. And again, we have a tool that helps with that. And once you know your app is localizable, you can send those resources as well as any images and so on out to be translated. And then as your translations complete, then you would include them, rebuild, resubmit to the store, and it will just turn on for whatever the end user in that particular region has.
Okay.
Is that not right? You seem skeptical.
That's fine, but I believe somebody else suggested if you support many, many languages, your store app gets bigger and bigger and bigger, as opposed to just the end user downloading the language that they want to run their
store. Oh, so you'd want your languages to be dynamic? To pull in your language, I don't think you can do languages as an in-app purchase. Yeah. No.
Some sort of plug-in mechanisms like for the language.
Sorry, over here?
Some sort of plug-in mechanisms for the language, like later on, you have a pre-compiled plugins that can work as an in-app.
So you would want pre-compiled, so you wouldn't be able to do that, right? I mean, there is no, from the Windows Store, there is no way to include pre-compiled plugins for your app later on after the fact. Your app has to go through certification and all of the good stuff that we do as part of the submitting of the app to the store. I think there was a question in the back. No? Okay, over here. Right. So the question was, what happens if I have libraries that I'm using in my app that have their own set of resources? And you can do that. And that's managed, and it just works as part of using those libraries. You can, in this case, I've used, I didn't mention this, but I've used the resources.resw, and that's the standard name for the XAML and so on. But you can actually, if you want, have separate resource files to do different things. You may want to separate your resources into different resource files. In that case, then you would have to start managing those resources and loading those files and then using the resource loader to load those files dynamically. But yeah, you can do that. Yes?
I noticed you had a lot of strings that were the same. Can you link resources to other resources?
Oh, okay. So the question was, you might have strings that are the same. Can I have one resource that points to another resource and pull that in so that you can duplicate that? And that's not something we do right now. It's a good suggestion. It's not something that's supported now. Jump in, Tim, if I say anything wrong, right?
Yeah, just on that note, you could absolutely do it if you use the resource loader APIs and just rely on that. But using the XUID mechanism, which is what I think you're pointing out, is there's potential for duplicate using them.
Okay. Yes. Right, so the question was, there's two possible questions. Are you talking about giving the translator context for where that string will be used?
Essentially.
Yeah, that's not part of the resource file, so you don't do that. And the translator doesn't have any idea of how much room they have. In general, you'll have to manage that as part of the design of your app. And I'll show you how you might want to look at that in a few minutes. And there are some ways to test for that using pseudo-localization ahead of time. But in general, you should leave probably about 25% more room than whatever your primary language is. So if you're English, you probably want to leave about, on average, about 25%. Is that about right, Cameron? Yeah.
You have context for that. I mean, you have comments for the translator.
That's a good point. So there is so Eric mentions that in the resource file, should have pointed this out, there is a comments field, and that comments field does go with the resource. So this, for instance, would be my note to the translator, and you could use that as a way of communicating to the translator something they might need to know about a particular string. For instance, this word is a proper noun, don't translate it, or something like that. Let me take one more question, then keep going, because I'm worried. And I just realized I forgot to start my clock. So I now have no idea how close or far I am to end time. Go ahead. Yeah.
Can I go back to the app values question?
Yep. Yep.
So how do I translate the secondary tiles the same way as the app tiles?
So the question was, how do I translate the secondary tiles? The secondary
the
tiles. Sorry?
The title of the secondary tiles.
Right. So each tile has standard templates, and so you build that dynamically. So if you have live information on the tile, you would be building that dynamically.
If it doesn't have any live content.
So why would you have a secondary tile if you didn't have live content? Okay. Sure. So in that case, you would just use your app title. I mean, it's just a resource.
Would that be translated then, if I change the language?
Sure. That's just part of your resource file. OK, let's keep going, because I want to make sure we get to all of the content. Here it is. So let's talk about finding the right language. As you saw, I had a lot of languages in my language list. And so that's how your end user communicates to you, to Windows, and by inference to your app, what languages they would prefer. As I mentioned, the list is sort of in order of preference, and so whatever is at the top is the one they prefer, and so on. And so you don't really have to worry about that. What you worry about is which languages are part of your localization, and that's typically Visual Studio will actually extract that from your resources. It will look at your resources and say, well, he's got en-us, so he's got English for US, and he's got fr.fr, so he's got French from France, and it will just build all of that. Again, it puts it in this PRA file and then manage that for you. And that these are then the languages that are listed when you submit to the Windows Store. And then you would be allowed to submit those languages, again, as part of your app. And that's what the end users would see when they download. There is one more thing, and that is that you can also allow the end user to override. So the end user might say, yeah, I'm English US, but you know what? I am a French expat, and so I want to see my apps in French. Or this app I would like to see in French. Because in this example, for instance, this is the Bing News app as part of Windows 8. They allow for an override, which is a typical scenario where, yeah, I might be in, I might be in France, but because I'm English, I want to see the news from the US. Right? And so you would allow the end user to override that. What it does is it pushes that language to the top of the language list and overrides everything. It's kind of a fallback and do that. I would caution you to make sure you use it appropriately. It is persistent and expensive. So if you set it next time that app loads, it will reload that language. And so the end user, if you do it behind the scenes, the end user will just see what you have done. It is expensive. The app does have to reload, and so be careful about that. It's not really meant for transient changes. So, for instance, if I want to switch languages to do some logging in my own language and then switch back again, this is not the way to do that. You would use a different context, or there's all sorts of other ways to do that. This is really for the end user to override the language setting, so be careful about that. There is an API specific to that, and is fairly straightforward to use, and just include it as part of your settings. So the question then is, we have these three things. We have the user's language, we have my app languages that are part of my app, and then we have this override. So how do all of these things work together to deliver what the end user sees in the app? And so I have a bunch of different scenarios that I'll walk through, and hopefully that will help you understand. I know this is probably one of the biggest question areas, so hopefully this will help you. And a lot of this is actually right in the MSDN docs. So let's start with the first one. So in this case, my app includes English from Great Britain and includes German, but the end user's preferences are English from Great Britain. And so as you can imagine, what the languages are available to the app are English, and the UI will be in English. The dates and times will be in English. Kind of straightforward. The next scenario is we have German, we have French from France, and we have Italian from Italy. The user's languages are French from Austria. And so if you look at my app-supported languages, I don't have French from Austria in my list. But the app languages will be French from Austria. Windows will do the intelligent thing and will say, well, French from Austria we don't have. The next best thing we have is French from France. And so I'm going to use French from France. And that's the fallback that's going to happen there. The next scenario is English US, French from France, English UK. The user's languages are English Canada and French Canada. So the app languages here are English Canada, French Canada. Now, English Canada is higher, and so that will be the language that will essentially get used. It will be English US, the fallback from English Canada. And so essentially it tries to do the intelligent thing. This is a scenario here where it's using the default language. And so here I have Spanish from Spain, Spanish from Mexico, Spanish from Latin America, and Portuguese from Britain. But my end user preferences say English US. That is not actually one of my supported languages. And so what the system will do is it says, I can't help you with the English US. I don't actually have those strings for you. So I'm going to use the default. When I load, I will be using Spanish from Spain, which is the default. The next one is, well, what happens if I have a set of resources that are only partial? Right, I may not have all of the strings translated yet. And so here, Spanish from Spain is the default, but the important one here is Catalan, which is a partial list, French from France. The end user's preferences are Catalan and French from France. And so the app languages are Catalan and French from France. And so in the UI, what you'll see is mostly Catalan, but you'll only see Catalan where you have Catalan strings. Where those don't exist, it will fall back, in this case, the app language that the end user has specified, which is French from France. Make sense? Is this making sense? The next one is the override. This is, as I mentioned, is kind of important, but only for very specific scenarios where you have app-supported languages and user preference languages. And really, the important one, the only one that matters here is English UK. And that's the one that the user has chosen in the app's UI. And so the app languages normally would be German, Germany would be the primary language. But because the end user has chosen English UK as the primary language, that one gets pushed to the top, and that one's the one that gets used for both the resource UI as well as all of the various dates and times. Does that make sense? I think I've covered most of the scenarios that you can think of. But I know this is the one that gets most people kind of excited. Yes?
In the slide where none of the preferences for the user and the app match,
yep.
the dates and numbers didn't get the user's preference. How is that?
No. So which one?
The third slide where you had the languages were all Spanish, but the users wanted English.
This one.
It says date, times, and numbers are Spanish.
Right. Because the app has not been designed for the US, it makes sense that the app uses the numbers that would be Spanish from Spain. Jump in, Eric.
So this is a big departure from the world prior to Windows 8. We're trying to give a consistent app experience. And so when your app is localized to Spanish, you want the best way to think about this now, the best way to think about this is that your dates, times, number, formatting are provided by the system for you, but they're really just specialized resources. You don't have to make them yourself, and that's nice, but they still fall within the same category of your app is going to give a consistent experience using the language for that particular application. Windows then just becomes, to the user, another application. So when you see your desktop or you see the shell, that's the Windows environment, and you'll see everything consistent there, but because applications can be in various different languages, the applications themselves are consistent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't agree, but yeah.
Okay. Let's keep going because I'm going to run out of time if I don't hurry along. So as you can imagine, all those are the standard scenarios, but in some scenarios you may actually need access to what's going on behind the scenes, and so there are APIs available to give you the list of what the user has declared as their languages, what the app has as languages, and what are the resolved languages that the app or that Windows has figured out for you. So you can get access to that if you need it. So let's jump into globalization. There's a number of things that are important here. Numbers and currency, date and time. There's also available to you collation, so you could figure out things like when you do semantic zoom, that might be handy, and calendar as well. I'm not going to talk about those today just for shortness of time. Those are available as APIs as well. So for number formatting and parsing, number of things here. There's basically the API windows.globalization.number formatting, and then there's a bunch of formatters that you can use there for both formatting of numbers and as well as parsing of those numbers. And I'll show you how those work in a couple seconds. And then same thing with date time. There's windows.globalization.datetime formatting, and then there's a date time formatter as well as calendar. So let's actually look at that in code. The same app, let me switch over. Okay, let me just run the app, show you what's going on. So this same app, which is my invoicing app here, is showing me a number of things that I'm doing here. So I'm displaying numbers as well as currency as well as dates. And I'm also inputting numbers and percentages here and then using that to do some interesting things. So let's see how I might actually use that. And stop that. And let's go in. That was it's called the add page. And so the first thing I do here, let's just look at the date time formatting. And date time formatting, remember you had these kind of strange strings with letters and all of that stuff. That's now been replaced with the windows.globalization.datetime formatting. You're now using these templated strings, and again, Windows, as you can imagine, does the right thing for you. And so in this case, I could have used just long date. It was probably the right thing to do in that scenario, but just to show you, I'm telling it I need month, day, day of week, and year, and I put them in this weird order, and then Windows will figure out the right order based on whatever culture I'm running in, right? And so essentially what I do is I new up a date-time formatter here. And then figure out what date I want to format. I'm just taking the current date, and then I'm just putting that into my invoice date.
and that's just a text box on the screen. When I'm doing number formatting, very similar. I have, in this case, I want to use currency. Actually, in this case, I'm using the currency just to figure out what the rounding is, because some currencies have different fraction digits. And so I'm pulling in the currency and pulling in a currency formatter. And that will then help me to do a bunch of different things. So for instance, when I'm pulling in a decimal formatter for the billing rate that I'm going to use, I don't want to show the dollar sign there. And though I figure out what that fraction digits is based on whatever the currency fraction digits is. So I'm just pulling that based on whatever the current culture is. And then I'm just formatting that billing rate, which is just a double variable that I have up top, which defaults to 1,000. I'm an expensive guy. Same thing with percent formatter here, just newing up a percent formatter and then formatting it. And then I do a number of different things. The interesting part comes in. Let me just show you. Sorry? Yep. Sorry. Have you guys been suffering all along? You should have. Sorry? Oh, you want me to just pump that up? Sure, I can do that. Is that better? Okay. Where was I going? Right, so let me see. So here I am doing the parsing when the end user has pulled in the date. I'm not doing it well, and I'll show you why in a couple seconds. So here I have the billing rate being pulled directly from the entry billing rate.txt. And of course, I'm not catching any errors. So if the end user messes up, let me just show you. As you can imagine, if I do something like put a letter in there, it's going to fail, right? As you can imagine. So the right way to do that would be try catch block. And so here's one that I've done up. This is the percent formatter where I am doing a try catch block. Again, I'm newing up a percent formatter, not because I want to format, but because I want to use the parse double on that to pull in the entry text and then use that value to put in the discount rate. And then if it's right, then I just leave it. If it's wrong, then I'm doing the right thing, which is just messing up and just showing the end user they've messed up and setting it to zero. Any questions on that? It's pretty straightforward stuff. Yep?
So when you were using the date formatter and you put things in an odd order,
yes.
And then the system took care of that for
yep.
you, what if I want it in the odd order?
So if you want it in the odd order, then you're kind of breaking, you're not actually using the culture of the end user. You're doing something outside of that, and so you'd have to build that yourself just using code.
Yep.
Right? Okay, go ahead. Can you use the mic so they get on recording?
Yeah. So what he showed you was what we're calling a template system. And templates then resolve to patterns. And patterns then are completely up to you to specify the order, any additional text that needs to be there. And he doesn't show examples here, but you can find examples on MSDN. And that's what you would use for that particular case. It would still then go and resolve each of the constituents, but you're actually now specifying, I want this particular constituent at this particular location. You can, if you want to play with this, each of these templates, after you've constructed the datetime formatter here, it has a field called patterns, and you can take a look at what are resolved from this using different stuff, and that's a good way to see some of what are the patterns that are actually used.
I should
jump in and say, I missed this. You said you should use a try-catch block for that.
Yep.
Actually, what's returned when it doesn't parse is null. The reason you're throwing is because you're actually trying to resolve that null pointer.
So you could just done an if.
So you could have just said, if this is, get the value, get the result,
right.
And then if it's null, then do your fallback, and otherwise you can go ahead and do the value as you did.
Okay. So then next step is translation. So now that I have built my app, I have all my resources, what do I do with those?
And there are a number of different options. What we've been doing is basically do it yourself, right? So it's in Visual Studio, you know the resources, and you can basically, if you know the languages, you can translate it yourself. There are some tools available. So for instance, Microsoft has a fairly extensive set of apps or software that we've built over the years that where we have translated. We have made that, those glossaries available to you at this location. And by the way, I have bundled these links all up in a bit.ly link that you can get at the end that will show you all of the various links. So you can do that all yourself, but then you're doing a lot of the translation work. And as you can imagine, if you're going to do a lot of languages, that's going to start to get tedious. And also, if you want to give it to a translator, you're not going to want to give them a ResW file. That's just not something. And you're certainly not going to want to give a translator Visual Studio and access to your source. So that doesn't work. Now, we have released something called the Multilingual App Toolkit. I'll show you how that works in a couple of seconds. And that actually solves a lot of these problems, where you can then take these ResW files, or in this case, it will actually convert or use what are called XLIF files, and you can send those XLIF files to the translator. They can translate using a very simple utility and send it back to you. The next step beyond that would be perhaps to use some web services that allow you to do this. For instance, crowdsourcing, something like getlocalization.com does this, where you would actually host your resources in the cloud and then invite people to come and translate for you. And then when you get to a certain level, you would pull those resources back in and recompile and add that language. Or you might use a professional third-party service, a professional translators, translation services that do that. There are also professional web services where you may have your own translator and you may actually invite professional translators in, services like TransFX. And there's a bunch of them out on the web that do this sort of thing. I'm going to focus on Multilingual App Toolkit because I think it provides a super value to you to get you started in that vein. So the first thing it does is it integrates with Visual Studio and allows you to add and manage these translation files. It also includes a pseudo language engine, and you'll have to specify the language, and I'll show you how that works in a couple of seconds. And so this allows you to set yourself up for localizability so that when you do get your languages back from translators, they actually will work better. It will allow you to translate those, to send those files out to translators and then import them back in when you get them back. And then finally, there's this lightweight editor that a translator or any end user, a family or friend that might know another language, can actually use that. And it will actually integrate into the Microsoft Translator service and allow you to actually use those translations directly from the web. Let's actually look at that. I'm actually running short on time, so let's just jump in. So I have another app. This is one that was provided. It's just a demo app that we use. And it's, let me just run it. Okay. Let's try that again. So very simple app. It's just a list of dogs with pictures and so on. And actually, you can see, you can't see them, but there are some localizability errors here. For instance, you'll see this later, but remember the app title is Woof. There's also some things like some strings that are identical. I enjoy playing fetch with sticks and balls. You might see that in some apps where you have strings that are identical. And so that makes it a little hard. And then if I click on one of these, so for instance, Happy Dogs, see Happy Dog is a flea-free dog, and so on. There's actually a localizability error here, and we'll see how we might see that. And so let's actually look at what the multi-language toolkit does to help me solve some of these things. So the first thing I'll do is I'll actually enable the multilingual app toolkit. And what that does is it adds a resource. The first thing it does is it adds the pseudo language as a resource. And you'll see that that's actually in an XLIF file. And so what I need to do is build, and first time I build, it will actually add the resources in. And so if I open that up, you'll see it open in a separate editor. And you'll see here that the resources are all just there. And they're just in English. It's just copied them over and set them as new resources. So now if I right-click and say generate pseudo translations, you'll see here that it's now actually done some interesting things with the text. And so, for instance, it's given me each one of the texts now has a unique ID in the front. It's also put it with square brackets. It's done some padding. Each one of the text strings has fancy characters with accents and so on, which will make it very apparent when I'm running this app. Let's actually do that now. Actually, let me just add one more language, just because I want to make sure I have enough time. So in the project, I'm going to say add translation language. And so I will add, I've been using French, so let me just add French. Add French from France. Say OK. And so it's now done the same thing, French from France. Now let me just show you. If I open that, there's nothing in there now. I can actually open with, it's actually a standard XML file. It's using a standard industry standard for this sort of thing called XLIF. It's now empty. I have to build again. See, rebuild the solution. And you'll see that will get, it's just a standard XML file. And what a multilingual app toolkit does behind the scenes is it, as you do your build, it will actually use that make PRI to build your PRI for you based on these. And so what I could do with this is send this out. Now I could say send for translation. And I'll just use a mail recipient here. And it should now launch. I guess I should have had Outlook open. But you'll see that it will launch Outlook, allow me to type in the name. It includes the translation XLIF file, as well as instructions to the translators where they can go and download the multilingual app toolkit so that they don't have to worry about Visual Studio and so on. And so that solves a lot of the issues. As you can imagine, one of the things you might want to do is start with language. And so here I have the word happy dogs. And you'll see that there's a translate function available. So if I click on that, it's actually gone out to the Microsoft Translator service, translated using that, and brought that back. And I can actually do that quickly, translate all. And now it's actually going out and doing each one of these strings in turn. And in a couple seconds, it will come back and we'll have translated all. This is really handy. Of course, I wouldn't suggest you publish with these strings, but it's a good first pass. If you're French, you'll notice that there's lots of grammatical errors. So please don't publish. But again, it's a good first pass that you can then perhaps give to a translator to take it a little farther and refine it. Make sense? So let's actually run. And before I run, I'm going to set my localization to, here it is. So you'll see I have a language here. Let me just, I've already added it, but let me just show you. This is sort of a trick you need to know. When you're using pseudo-localization, there is no pseudo-localization list in the browser. But if you search for it by its code, it's QPS-PLOC, you'll see, in this case, I've already added it. But you'll see that as a developer, you can add it on your system. It's not something you would want an end user to do, but you can add it on your system. And then by doing that, and then adding, moving that up, now I have pseudo-localization as my primary language. So if I run this app, now it's going to take the pseudo language as my language. And you'll see that this now helps me to figure out some of the localizability errors. So for instance, if there was an issue with these two strings, which are identical, how would the translator or the tester tell you which string had a problem, right? This way, you have the unique ID, and they can tell you what's 30D0A is the one I want, and there's an issue with that, and it's not long enough, it's getting truncated, or what have you. You'll also notice there's a localizability error here in that, anyone spot it? It's pretty easy to spot. There's only one string on there that actually looks English. It's the title, right? That should have been translated localized, and it's not. So that kind of pops out because you're using the pseudocode and it doesn't have these goofy characters in it, it's easy to spot. The other thing you might spot is because it's padded the strings, both with these IDs as well as adding strings after the fact, you can see, for instance, down here it's added all these exclamation marks. If you can't see that right square bracket, then there's a problem, right? And if you have to see the entire string. And so you can see where it normally would have said a happy dog is a flea-free dog, you can see that that's actually been truncated. And so you probably that text block doesn't have wrap on, and so you should go and fix that. So that's a localizability bug that you wouldn't spot until you had a language that came in that actually had a string that was longer than your English one. Does that make sense? I'm actually out of time, so let me just switch back. So we use Microsoft Translator for custom workflows. That is available to you as well. There's a bunch of APIs available to translate, to detect languages. You can also use it to crowdsource if you have your own translations. And then as a bonus, if you have content you want translated, you can use those APIs as well. I have a bunch of resources. I'm doing the same session later on today for HTML, CSS, JavaScript. So if you have friends, please invite them. There's a bunch of samples that you should have a look at. I've put all of the links for all of this stuff in this bit.ly bundle. And so bit.ly/benriga-build2012. And you can see it'll have links to all of these samples, as well as the various sites, including where to go and download the Multilingual App Toolkit, where's that Microsoft Translator developer site, as well as the Microsoft Language Portal with all the various glossaries. And with that, I am going to stop. I think I'm a minute over, so I'm probably going to have to get off stage. But I will hang around for any questions. I'll just hang around next to the stage here if you have any questions. Thanks so much for coming.